Thank you very much, Kirsty. Well, you can all relax now. We're not going to talk too much about agronomy, but what we're going to talk about is a little bit about quality of product. Everybody knows a fertilizer is meant to deliver nutrients to a crop. The question is, how does a farmer handle that? It needs to be in a very practical format. So we're going to address that concern with this product. So what is Poly4? Well, Poly4 is our product, which is basically a 90% pure polyhalite mineral taken out of the ground, crushed to a powder, re-agglomerated into a standard agricultural pellet. Okay, as I've just indicated, we can define fertilizers. Oxford English Dictionary can do this, Institute of Fertilizers can do this, but as far as the farmer's concerned, he has these practical questions. It has to deliver nutrients. What is the effect on soil? Can he spread it? Can he store it? Etc. That answering those questions enables him to place the product in the right place, to understand the delivery of nutrients at the right time, and to predict what is an appropriate rate. The next step, of course, is, okay, some farmers blend their own materials. Some farmers actually buy complex compounds or dry blends from dealerships. The question dealers are going to have is, okay, if I use this novel product, what is the effect on the characteristics of the complex compound or the dry blend with which the farmer demands? Okay, I think we've probably seen enough of this so far. These are the standard nutrients as oxides. The other thing that polyhalite is delivering, because as you've already heard, it's a very simple process, there's no beneficiation to the raw ore, what you're actually being able to deliver is some beneficial micronutrients as well. So this is a multi-nutrient fertilizer. It's quite simple in terms of manufacturing process. It's a very efficient product because you're delivering nutrients in a crop-available form. You're delivering nutrients very effectively. You're not disrupting soil pH. The multi-nutrient aspects of this drives and improves and elevates fertilizer use efficiency. It's a very sustainable product, because you're able to deliver more from less in some senses, and certainly in terms of nutrient uptake. But what is also important for the industry going forward is carbon footprint. The actual manufacturing process clearly is very simple, very straightforward, and low energy demanding. Last thing I'll just briefly touch on is that this is a low chloride product. That gives you some flexibility in terms of the crops that you put it onto and the timing of that application. The next thing and the last thing that I'll touch on before I get into the meat of the presentation is that this is an organic certified product. So finally, what we want to know about is what is the compatibility. Now, it's excellent. So there you go. You can all leave right now. Fine, story over. So if you go back to 2015, at that point in time, we wanted a quick result, and we actually commissioned some work by Dr. Gavin Walker. He used an accelerating caking test to give us some rapid indications in terms of compatibility and caking propensity. So this obviously is a piston and die methodology. You put your mixture of fertilizers in here, you compact it down to 90 psi over a certain time frame, and then the pressure which is required to extrude the plug gives you some indication of caking propensity. So this time here, from this point to maximum 90 psi, gives you an indication from which you can extrapolate shelf life. So you may be familiar with the European Fertilizer Manufacturers Compatibility Triangle. And basically how you read this is you go down a column and you come across a column, and where the two meet, you get an indication of the compatibility rating. You can see basically we're very fortunate with this material. Polyhalite, apparently according to this test, is compatible with everything, and the worst case scenarios are marked by these ones. So what I'm going to talk about now is the next phase in this is using another method which actually ratifies the findings of Walker and Walker's methodology, but on top of that, some of the practical aspects which farmers and growers and blenders are going to ask. What is the effect on critical relativity? Can you confirm this compatibility? What is the dust tendency, abrasion, and impact resistance? So these are the standard materials which we used in our test. And for a compatibility rating, these are the assessment criteria and the observations that you get. So let me just nip forward to the results and indicate to you that nothing's changed. We've ratified this with the IFDC protocol and you get exactly the same results. Again, the worst case scenario is when you're mixing ammonium nitrate with poly 4, and that is probably the calcium content in poly 4 doing that. But in terms of how severe that is, it's severe enough that in the test it's simply a 200 millimeter vial with 100 grams of material inside. You look to see if these granules are actually fused together. Yes, they do to some extent. If you tap it on the desk at the end of the study, all opens up and is free again. Really, it's a very, very minor effect. In terms of critical relative humidity, everybody knows that when you mix more and more fertilizer products together, you get a bigger and bigger depression in terms of CRH. And I don't want to dwell an awful lot on this, but simply these products are very common components of NPK blends. And what you'll see is a slight depression in CRH here, a slight elevation in CRH compared to the native material. So it is the effect of adding poly, slightly positive, slightly negative, slightly positive. Nothing there surprising. And obviously, if you mix a rock phosphate with poly 4, on average, you're going to elevate the CRH, etc. So, next phase is to look at some compatibility when you're actually trying to make three or four-way NPK mixtures, is what the industry does. So what you'll see here is a series of urea blends and a series of ammonium nitrate blends. What you'll see, what we've tried to do is keep the empirical NPK ratio internally the same here, 2:1:1. So what effectively you're looking at is changing the K source. So what happens when you increase the polyhalite component and you decrease the MOP component within the blend, and see what is the effect on the characteristics that we're trying to assess. So here, one of the first tests we did was we looked at the NPK blend made with ammonium nitrate, rock phosphate, MOP and poly 4. At this point, there's a slight smell of ammonia, so we went in a blinding flat panic and said, what's the cause of that? Well, basically that forced us to go and do more 50-50 checks of ammonium nitrate with rock phosphate, ammonium nitrate with MOP, ammonium nitrate with poly 4, and then obviously the basic standard 111 NPK without poly 4. And just to skip to the summary, the primary culprit for the ammonia gas generation is actually the ammonium nitrate with the rock phosphate. And what I can tell you right now is the one that generates the most ammonical smell is this one. So the key driver as a problem in that blend is not the polyhalite component, it's actually the rock phosphate and ammonium nitrate interacting. When you come to do the same sort of thing with the urea blend, I'll skip to my observation, is basically there is no issue on compatibility with urea NPK blends. If anything, by the time you get up here at a 50% component weight for weight within an NPK blend, you actually end up with a very long-lasting NPK product. Okay, one option for farmers and growers is to go down the blend route. The other option is to grow and buy a complex compound. They are popular in different parts of the world, and you can make these by compaction, or you can make these under steam granulation, or further you can go the chemical route. So at this point in time, we use a very small scale piece of kit and want to understand what is the effect on abrasion resistance. So with a series of urea blends, you can see that increasing polyhalite component up to 50% actually results in a reduced degradation. In other words, it's more resilient to abrasion. In the ammonium nitrate blend series, we did not observe any influence at all. The effect on critical relative humidity, again, going from 0 up to 50% inclusion rate of poly 4 in a compacted NPK, doesn't make any difference on critical relative humidity for the urea series or the ammonium nitrate series. And let's go and look at dustiness of product. The same sort of scenario. What you tend to see is as you increase the poly 4 component within this NPK compacted product, you get a reduction in dustiness of the product, and a similar trend in the ammonium nitrate product. Now, one method was compacted product. Final method that we're able to start touching on right now, and this is an ongoing study, so some of these results have only come to us in the last 3 or 4 days. So I don't have a complete series of tests, but I'll show you what I've got for steam granulation. We've got some results from ammonium nitrate blends, and similarly, it reflects what you see with the compacted product. As you increase the polyhalite component within this NPK, you end up with a reduction in degradation, which is an improvement in abrasion resistance. All very important factors. Abrasion resistance is important for people spreading it with mechanical means, or even for transit, and probably some effect on ship loading, etc. as well. Impact resistance, again, most important for ship loading. If you think about the tonnage which goes into an open hold in a ship and it gets dropped down a spout 10 or 15 metres, you don't want it to shatter on impact. So we've looked at this in ammonium nitrate blends with higher and higher inclusion rates of poly 4, and what you find is the material seems to be more and more resilient to impact resistance. Dust generation, this also reflects the results that we found with the compacted product. So you can make this NPK series using a steam granulation technique, and again, as you include a higher and higher proportion of poly 4 into that blend, what you find is a reduction in dustiness of the product. So in conclusion, what we've managed to do is ratify the methodology of Walker et al. He published a paper recently with Aldebaran and one of our own scientists, Dr. Tim Lewis. We've been able to ratify that the original bench methodology used for us to extend the compatibility triangle is valid. So we validated that with IFDC methodology. We've also then continued looking at compatibility. What you see, a very slight improvement perhaps in compatibility of NPK products, as we've seen here for the ammonium nitrate series or the urea series. And then it doesn't make much difference either whether you go down and you compact the product into a complex or you use steam granulation to make the complex. You see an improvement in abrasion resistance, not much impact on critical relative humidity, but dust generation is also reduced. So, not too bad. I have 2 moments for questions. Thank you.
Can you repeat the question, please?
Sir.
Rob, you showed that urea is compatible with poly 4. In some markets, so the National Emission Ceiling Directive in Europe, for example, has set the context such that use of urease inhibitors with urea is a likely mitigation option for ammonia loss from urea. Have you looked at, or do you plan to look at, the compatibility of poly 4 with urea treated with urease inhibitors?
So in summary, the question is, will we look at other formulations of ureas, coated and treated products in this sort of scenario? The answer to that is yes. This is probably phase two of an ongoing series where we'll obviously have to expand all the materials we test in this compatibility triangle, and then you'll look at coated products and other treated products as well. So we will get there eventually, yes.
Still have time for questions.
I thought you were going to hook me off.
Well, no, 15 minutes. I'll tackle you. But
I was wondering if you know how, if you have any information on how it may be setting now in North America. What do you
have? Can you repeat that, please?
Would you have any information on how it is setting?
Selling. Okay, put the whole story in perspective. I'll talk about the retail opportunities, was your question, yeah? Okay, so Sirius Minerals is a junior mining company founded in 2003. 2015, we got planning permission to construct a deep shaft mine in a national park, the biggest and probably prettiest national park in the UK. Funding was initiated in November last year. We've only just started deep shaft construction. We're now at a phase where We're constructing guide walling, which is a necessary precursor, if you like, to the diaphragm walling and deep shaft sinking. We anticipate hitting the first polyhalite of our resource in 2020 and having the poly4 product available through the constructed transport mechanism up to our deep water port and mineral materials handling facility in 2021. In the meantime, what we have right now for these sorts of trials is actually a pilot plant up and running, which is using some of the resource that we have had from our own excavations and categorization, if you like, of the of the mineral resource, which Xie Hufan mentioned earlier. If that helps.
Is it retailing available in the US?
This formulation, our polyhalite poly 4, is not available commercially until 2021. At this moment in time, we are heavily involved in commercial negotiations to ensure that certain distributors only have access to it.
Okay, because based on the question earlier, I was under the assumption it was already for sale in the US. So.
I have a product to play with in order to drive interest, if you wish.
Okay. Oh, thanks.
Thank you very much.